Hi, this is Paul Jindrasiak for Sunday Morning Town Square, and I'm joined in the studio by Brian Vandrock. You probably know Brian as the front man of the Verve Pipe and from his solo work. How you doing today, Brian?
I'm all right. Thanks for you and I haven't really had a chance to sit down and chat ever. This is nice.
No, we haven't. I'm glad we've got the opportunity.
You're a Grand Rapidian icon. I see your name everywhere all the time.
Well, thanks.
We should take over this city, you
and
I. Well,
today's the day, huh?
Today's the day we're taking over.
So it was,
the Fords be damned.
Yes,
no,
yes. Well, so it was 1996, March of 96. It was my last day as editor of Music Review magazine, and the last phone call I took was from you.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Was I complaining about something?
You weren't. You weren't complaining in those days. You were calling to see if we got the press kit. I think Villains had just been released or was going to be released, and you were checking on that. So kind of going back to that time, tell me a bit about what was going on. You got your first major label deal. You're out on your first tour. Was it everything that you were expecting, kind of leading up, when you're a teenager, musician, you're playing guitar in your room? Was it everything you dreamed of? And what was it at the end of the day?
It was. Looking back on it, it's easy to look back on it fondly in retrospect, I think that the expectations when you're growing up is that it's going to be instant fame. And for most bands, RCA alone, I think, or, at the time it was Atlantic, we heard they had like 500 bands or whatever, and you only really hear of, three or four bands. So there's a huge failure percentage, for major labels. And we had no idea of that. We just thought we get signed and we're going to be famous.
Right.
And what really happened to us was we did get signed, and it happened pretty fast comparatively.
What got you on the radar?
You were
shopping labels at the time, yes?
We were. We went back and forth with Atlantic and RCA. And RCA didn't have anybody. They had ZZ Top. And at that time, ZZ, this was after their heyday, of course. And they had Dave Matthews, who nobody knew at that point. Nobody had any idea. And we would say, well, they have Dave Matthews. And people would say, who's Dave Matthews?
We had a bit of a college following at that point.
He did, yeah. But it wasn't nearly as successful for him enough to buoy a label. So we went with the label where we knew we were going to get more attention.
Sure.
And that turned out to be our smart move, I think.
Sure.
In the short term. In the long term, I'm not sure it was the smart move. I think that Atlantic probably had better people that would have taken longer care of us. But we made our choices and made a great impact and then, kind of went away and did our thing.
So you get signed, you're in the studio, you're cutting your first album. What's that all like for you?
That was a tough experience. I was a big fan of Jerry Harrison.
Right, Talking Heads.
Yep. And he had produced a live album, which I thought was a terrific sounding record. Copper Jewelry? What was it? Mental? I don't know. I remember the name of that live album. Their big album. Jerry was not really all that easy to work with. He was not as enthusiastic as we were.
Okay.
We were a very workhorse
band.
Did
he just look at you as a bunch of young punk kids?
He was nice enough, but he was he'd go to the studio and he'd want to go sailing or something. We're here to work. I want to work.
Recording studio out on a sailing boat. Roll it all into one. Why not?
I'm telling you. So there was a whole different work ethic there.
Sure.
Now in the end, and the album was hugely successful. So,
absolutely.
I got to give him credit for that. So maybe that was his method. I don't know. But for me personally, I wasn't that interested in the party and the relaxation in the studio. We were, like I said,
you wanted to get to work.
Well, yeah. When we used to work at Station C Studios here in Grand Rapids, our first two albums, and you'd book studio time, and my God, you were in there right away, and you were paying for it.
That's what you did.
Boom, 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 boom. Get things done. Let's go. Who's up next? And there it just wasn't,
kind of
one
extreme
like doing
to
a
the
guitar
other.
Today. Sure, I'll do a guitar, that kind of thing.
Right.
My vibe at all.
But you guys seemed to hit pretty quickly with the success of that.
What
was your first thought? You hear yourself on the radio outside of this marketplace.
I was driving in Florida. I had a convertible. I rented a convertible, and I felt embarrassed by it for some reason. I guess it just wasn't the way I was brought up. I was brought up to have really crappy cars, But I'm driving like a convertible Mustang in Florida, and I had this really hot girlfriend at the time, And we were and the song came on the radio. Photograph came on the radio, and it was like that moment was like the greatest moment.
Surreal.
It's like, wow.
Yeah.
I mean, just so random that a station in Orlando happened to play it. And then from there, it really took off, you know?
Sure.
Cup of Tea was released and didn't do very well.
Okay.
And we found out later that RCA was prepared to drop the rest of the album and not put anything else out. And
really?
We didn't know that, you know?
So what did you do at that point when
you
found that out?
Well, originally it was supposed to be Reverend Girl was going to be next off that album, and then Villains, and then The Freshman. Well, they jumped straight to The Freshman.
Okay.
And if they hadn't done that, he said they wouldn't have done The Freshman.
You know? Would it have been your choice to have had Freshman out that early, or what was your thought process? Because sometimes bands approach it differently.
Well, I was convinced because it was a real kick in the groin to have Cup of Tea not do anything. Really tanked.
Right.
And I really thought Cup of Tea was a great rock song, and I thought it was better than Photograph was as a song, lyrically and melodically, and it didn't do anything. So I took a real beating on that one.
Well, sometimes it can be that way for a musician or an artist. You've got something, and you're really high on it, and the moment you put it out there, people don't connect with it the way that you did,
that's
and
exactly
you hoped.
Exactly right. I've lived that for the last 10 years with my solo stuff. You know,
okay.
Everything I write that I feel most strongly about doesn't resonate with people.
Okay.
And the stuff that I don't feel as strong about resonates.
Sure.
You know, I mean,
sure.
It's just the way it is.
Sure. And like I said, you know, find that with artists as well. You know, somebody who does a painting and they're all about it, and then other people, not so much. But then maybe it's something they just did off the cuff for fun, and they're like, yeah, whatever. And everybody's
I'm sure
like,
you experienced that as well, right? With a photographer.
Yeah, right? Sure. You know, there'll be something I think, you know, has a great emotional depth to it, and then maybe other people don't view it the same way, and then something I think is really bland and boring, and everybody's all about it. But, you know, what can you do?
For taste.
You view things through different ears, through different eyes, I guess, is, you know.
Well, everyone has their own baggage. And
sure.
Everyone has, you know, their own past. And when you come across something, it speaks to you in one way. That's why art is so subjective. It speaks to one person one way and another person another way. For me, the important thing is to get what I want out there the way I want it to be seen.
Mm-hmm.
And heard, and you know, we've made albums and put songs out that didn't end up that way,
right?
Not the way that I would have wanted it, and to this day I'm unhappy about those songs.
But at the end of the day, they still mean something important to you.
Absolutely, because I can pick up an acoustic guitar and mm-hmm. sit at home or sit in a house concert, which is what I do now, and I can play those songs the way that I feel that they should have been recorded, and I'm really happy with them.
Sure,
know,
I completely understand. Now, you were saying with Jerry Harrison, you know, his process was a little bit different than what you were used to, but did you get some wisdom from him, some things that he shared with you, you know, kind of? Obviously, he had a pretty interesting career.
If we're going to be honest,
fair enough.
I didn't take much from Jerry. I really didn't get a lot from Jerry.
Bit of a letdown?
It was a letdown.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't get what I wanted out of Jerry. I mean, I was a huge fan, and I felt like we had really made it when we got him to do the album, and I got more out of Carl Durfler, who was the engineer, than I did from Jerry.
Okay.
I really didn't. His approach just wasn't, we didn't jibe.
Okay, okay.
So
now you're out on the road. I think you did some dates with Kiss.
Yeah. Awful.
Why awful?
Well, when you open for Kiss, you get booed. I mean, that's, you know, we didn't know that.
Okay.
I mean, Gene, you know, I think they had a lot of fun with that. You know,
did you have a chance
they liked
to
us.
Chat with Gene and Paul?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Gene would stop by the back room. He was a fan. He really liked Villains a lot.
Sure.
And we were handpicked by he and Paul.
Oh, you know, what a great honor.
It was
honor.
Very nice. It was a huge honor.
Yeah.
I mean, we were thrilled. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was a big Kiss fan when I was growing up. But, you know, the first couple gigs, it was like, oh, no, that's what this is about. You know, you go out and you instantly get booed for the first three songs. So we would win people over for the most part.
Right.
You know, and by the end of it, you know, we'd get the applause and the accolades, and people would buy the CD. But, man, that was the toughest first three songs ever.
Really?
But honestly, we did like, I think, 13 or 14 dates, and then in the southern states. And then Gene, you know, was so miserable. I did not want to go on stage every night. My stomach was in knots.
Oh,
I'm sure
geez.
An ulcer. And Gene asked if we would go to Europe with them, and I jumped at it.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely, we'll go. And I was like, and as soon as they left, I was like, why did I do that? And we did. We went to Europe. We did. You know, we got to play in Czechoslovakia, which was amazing. They were great to us. The French were great to us. The Germans hated us. You know, and we got to go to all these great places and play with Kiss. I mean, that was much better than in the States.
Sure.
Until we got to Germany, and then the Germans, they spit on us.
What was it about the Germans?
I have no idea. I speak German. You know, I lived in Germany for 2 years. I spoke German to them. Nothing could turn that crowd around.
Really?
They threw stuff at us. They covered us in their phlegm. It was an awful experience.
Now, did Kiss have the makeup back on at that time?
Yeah, this was
when
they first put it back on.
Yep,
96.
Yeah, that's right.
In fact, they played with Stone Temple Pilots at Tiger Stadium, and then the next night we went out with them.
Okay.
We didn't get that honor of playing at